It is Sunday morning, and I am in pajamas, so you know what that means.
What does it mean, Brad? I didn't read the script.
Doesn't matter. It means it's time for the Sucks Podcast, of course, and I am your host, Brad.
And I am your host, Dave.
And I'm your friendly neighborhood producer, Joe.
This is a podcast where three dummies and friends talk about design, intentional and otherwise, in all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us all every day. Important note, we are lovers, not experts of UX design. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way they are.
And where those design decisions might have gone off the rails.
Gentlemen, how the hell are you doing on this fine Sunday morning?
I'm going to let Joe answer that one because I've got a mouthful here to spit at you, Brad.
I'm pretty good, but I want to hear how Dave's doing. I think he's got a story that can kind of tee up everything that's going on today.
Joe, you've been a bit under the weather. Are you feeling better?
Yeah. That's a long, boring story. I want to hear Dave's story.
Okay. I'm doing okay. And anyway, let's tee it up. Dave, how are you doing? We are setting you up here.
Well, I currently have my foot in bandage, an ice pack on it.
Oh, no.
And it elevated because I went to the Primavera Sound Festival, LA, last night.
I heard something about that.
Uh-huh. So I'm probably a little bit old to be in a mosh pit, but nevertheless, I found myself there.
We know you're old because you call it a mosh pit.
What do you call it? The pit?
Yeah.
Oh, I've always called it the pit.
And don't sell yourself short. Don't sell yourself short, Dave. You don't look a day older than 55.
Well, thank you, Brad. I love when you oversell it because it makes it funny, but it's not too far off. But so in the mosh pit or the pit, Joe, they had these things in the middle. I guess they cover up the wires or something. There are these little platforms that are, go over the grass, and they're terrible. Sure. We could talk about the UX of that when we get into the show.
Well, it's better than tripping over cable. You're talking about those little speed bump, the little yellow.
And the pit was right around, the circle was right over that thing. So people kept falling and somebody landed. Much heavier than me, landed right on my ankle. And caught him with my ankle and my ankle didn't want to give. But luckily at the last minute, I moved it. So I'm hoping this is just a sprain or sore and not a break. I can walk on it all. I can hobble. So I think I'm going to be okay. Then I went to the medic tent, which we'll talk about.
Okay.
And the nurse there, took a look at it and said, she thinks I'm going to be all right. I think I'm going to keep the foot, fellas.
Good.
Thank goodness. Well, let's get this out of the way now. We were all supposed to go to this music festival together. So Dave, so sorry about that. I had life happen. And that happens sometimes. So I wasn't able to go. And Joe, as we mentioned, has been under the weather. So so sorry to bail on you, man. That was supposed to be the whole episode, is that we were going to go to this thing together and then come together and talk about how much I hated the experience.
Oh, Brad.
I think our tickets were jinxed.
Mm-hmm. Were they?
I gave mine to a friend who at 2 hours after she got it was in a car accident. You sprained her ankle.
She was in a car accident?
Small one. She
But
I think she still went. Her and Nick still went. But
after you gave her the tickets, not last night.
No.
Okay.
I feel literally bad. Handed the tickets over.
I don't know if she listens. I don't know if she listens, Sarjo. I don't know if she listens to this podcast, but if she does, my apologies. I just could not. I needed my phone charged, and trying to find her was decreasing my charge. I'm like, I need all those sweet shots. I'm going to be right in front of the stage. I can't, and I needed to get up to the front of the stage. So I kind of gave up on it.
That's fine. I didn't really need you guys. I just told her. I wanted to check in with Dave and
let her know, I tried. And I just couldn't find her.
Sure. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll get into the experience of the podcast. But Dave, you did take some epic shots right up front. So we'll post those on the socials for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, cool. We'll get into the meat of the show and all that stuff after the break. But before we do that, I think it's time for, you know what it's time for?
I don't know, Brad. I like when you say it. Say it, Brad.
It's the cool shit. It's the cool shit. It's cool shit.
It's old people telling you what's cool.
Right.
If anyone wants to sign me to a recording contract, you know.
I think it's going to happen, Brad. Joe, why don't you go first?
All right. Okay. So this is something I picked up this week. And I'm not going to pretend that I understand the whole thing, because I think, as Richard Feynman said, if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't understand quantum physics. But the rules of quantum physics are, it's weird. Things seem to pop in and out of existence. They also seem to interact over distances. It's something for 100 years now, like even Einstein had a phrase for it, it's called spooky interaction over distance.
Spooky action.
Spooky action. Yes. Okay. Yep. Thank you. So
I've gotten some spooky action in the day.
Yes. So yeah. And over the years, I think that they've kind of learned a little bit more about it, and they've called it quantum entanglement, where basically, like, if you observe a particle that's entangled with another particle at a distance, you can observe it, or if you change it, you know, the other one will change identically. And they set a new record for this at a distance of 20 miles or 33 kilometers. Again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I understand the physics behind it, but the potential for it is basically instantaneous transfer of information. I guess I'm speculating here a little bit. Like, basically, if you like turn on ones and zeros on one side, you could turn on ones and zeros on the other side instantaneously. So basically, transfer of information faster than the speed of light, creating advanced quantum computing, quantum internet. And really, I don't know what the implication of that is, but it sounds to me like...
It sounds to me like teleportation. Can we teleport using this technology?
We can, but information, you're too big. You're too macro, Brad. Okay.
Dave, what you got? Cool shit.
This one I'm going to keep quick and easy. These are maglev cars, not quite flying cars. So, you know, roads where we're going, we kind of still need roads. Okay. Yeah. So maglev cars, Chinese researchers are at Southwest. I'm going to totally bastardize this. Xiaotong University have tested modified cars capable of magnetically levitating almost an inch and a half, fellas, a whole inch and a half. Off the ground over a stretch of, and here's the key word, which is going to make this a short discussion, specially modified highway. All right.
Sure.
So the thing is, I've seen the video of this on the web here on Twitter or somewhere, and it's pretty clunky. It kind of bumps. It kind of looks like somebody's got some, what are they called? Hydraulics. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it looks like they got hydraulics. They're just bouncing all over the place. You know, I shouldn't sell it short. I mean, these things go 143 miles per hour. It's pretty fast, but it's not as fast as kind of the trains, which go 373 miles per hour. But I'll tell you what, I don't know that I want to be going 373 miles in a maglev car. Huh. So it looks like China's constructing the country's first independently developed trial line. So I guess with this technology, different than the flying cars that actually fly, you know, these are going to be the things that kind of just hover, you know, like your hoverboards and Back to the Future.
Right. So it could be way more energy efficient. And that's
the idea. Yeah. And I think you'd be controlled by the actual road, you know, that would be the hope. And then everybody can kind of go at the same speed. You've seen this in, what was that Tom Cruise movie? Minority Report. Mm-hmm. Those are like maglev cars. So, I love stuff like this. It seems like this is taking a little too long, like we thought about in science fiction when we were knee high. Yeah. But it's still, you know what it is, Brad? It's still cool shit.
Okay. All right. Well, that's
what I got, guys.
I know somebody who's working on a flying car project. We should have them on to talk about flying cars.
Is their name Doc Brown?
I can't say.
Okay. All right.
Due to some plutonium type situation. I can't say their name. Well, anyway, that was some cool shit, both of you. I especially liked where we pretended we knew what we were talking about with quantum physics.
Yes.
So good job. To the layperson, they might believe you. I don't. But good job. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we will come back with our special guest and talk about music festivals.
Hello?
Hey, David, it's me, man, Matt Dillon.
Matt Dillon, like from the movies?
Yeah, I guess I've been in some stuff, man.
Some stuff? Wild Things, Albino Alligator, Drugstore Cowboy, Singles? Holy shit, man, this is amazing. You dropped by the studio.
You know, I was just kind of hanging out, so I figured I'd drop by, man.
And, I mean, I'm loving this, but for any specific reason?
I guess I thought I could talk about Ruffles brand potato chips.
What? Ruffles brand potato chips?
Yeah, the thing is, I don't want to brag or anything, but $17 every time I mention Ruffles brand potato chips.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
You don't know how often I mention Ruffles brand potato chips. It's like a lot, man.
Okay, that's weird. Do you even like Ruffles brand potato chips?
Well, you know the thing about Ruffles brand potato chips?
What?
Well, Ruffles have ridges, man.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, buy Ruffles brand premium potato chips at your local retailer today.
Okay, you really love these Ruffles. All right, hey, before you go, are you in any new movies or projects or anything I could check out?
Not really, man. Just Ruffles.
I mean, come on. There's a lot of content, a lot of streaming TV. What do you got something lined up, right?
Ruffles.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks again. I got to get back to this podcast.
Ruffles, man. Ruffles.
Yeah, I know, but we're about to record, so you got to bounce. It was nice seeing you.
Yeah, man. Great to meet you. And I just wanted to say one last thing, and that's Ruffles, man.
And we are back. I want to introduce you all to Jay Hamill. She is a longtime music lover, an avid festival goer from both a personal and professional standard. She's also the general manager of a company called One of One Custom, which is a company that provides custom hearing protection to people in the music industry. And as a result of that work, she gets to go to a lot of festivals. And the coolest part is she doesn't have to pay for it. Jay, how are you? Welcome to the pod.
Good morning. I'm great. How are you guys?
So good. We're awesome to grateful have you. that you decided to join us today. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your company, One of One Custom, and what that means.
So One of One Custom, most people we're well known around the U.S. as ACS Custom USA, but in recent years we have rebranded and it's officially One of One Custom. And what we do is we specialize in custom hearing protection as well as in-ear monitors, right, geared mainly for people that are in the music industry. So as a result, we deal with a lot of obviously musicians, DJs, and people that play music, but even more so people that work in and around music. And so some of our clients are even the actual festivals themselves and things like that. So we get to go to some really cool places and see a lot of things. And not only that, I love music, so I go on both sides of that fence, sometimes on the front of house side and some on the back of house side too.
Right on. Nice. Now, I know this isn't what you do, Jay, but it is relevant. Last week I went to a Lady Gaga concert with my daughter, who's 9. It was her first big concert experience. And it was far too loud for her and, very overwhelming show. By the way, I'm not the hugest Lady Gaga fan, but it was really artfully done. And I got to give her props, but it was way too overwhelming for her, especially from a noise perspective. So if I had done it over again, I would definitely have given her some ear protection, which is probably good advice for all of us, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's some great stuff out on the market especially for kids, these things called bands earwear, and they're great for over the ear stuff. I give myself my baby shower gifts anymore.
So two questions, actually. One, I don't know if most people know what in-ear monitors are. And let's quickly really talk about, because this will actually kind of key into like what we're doing with festivals. When you say like the festivals hire you, it's because, there's all kinds of third-party people, right? Like the bartenders or roadies or whatever. So kind of maybe talk about that for like 4 seconds and then we'll really get into the meat of all this.
All right, sure thing. So as far as in-ear monitors, just to answer that question, in-ear monitors, when you say you went to the Lady Gaga concert, I don't know which monitor she had on last night, but I've seen ones where she has some beautiful gold, things situated in her ear. That is an in-ear monitor. Yeah. And so what that does is it helps to bring sound down so that the musician can hear their feed so that they can hear themselves and know when to, either sing or cue their instrument, things like that. And then to expand on how my company relates to music venues and festivals, actually, it's how my career kind of even started. I was booking bands for a small music venue down in Atlantic City. And, nice. When you are in that environment, OSHA is the occupational,
right,
overseeing organization for the U.S. So if you are in loud noise for a certain amount of time, there actually is a requirement for employers to provide hearing protection. In most cases, employers provide that by providing just like foam earplugs, But if you wearing a foam earplug and versus like if you have to live that life every single day, you want something that's comfortable. So there are companies where nightclubs will have us come out. And that's what how I first got my set of first earplugs was they had my this company that I now work for come down and fit us. And then about a year and a half later, the casino I was working for had closed and I was out celebrating new unemployment, I guess you could say. And I lost one of my earplugs. And when I called up to get it replaced, they said, should we send it to your office? And I said, well, I'm no longer there. And it just started a really good conversation. And I became an independent sales rep for them. And then in 2019, I became the sales manager. So we go out directly to the venues. And in those cases, the bartenders and staff working in there will pay for the earplugs themselves. It's, you know, it's kind of like just something that you need in your arsenal of tools for just as like you need good shoes if you're going to be on your feet all night. And then as far as we actually have corporate clients, you know, Live Nation is one of my, you know, big clients and I've been very lucky to have a relationship with them and they support having good hearing protection for their workers. So we work a lot with them and there's actually a charity organization through the Grammys called Music Cares and we've done a lot of work on behalf of Music Cares. They are a client of ours and Music Cares will be the ones that often we're out representing at music festivals. And in that case, it's about bringing the service of being fit for earplugs. When you have to get a custom fit earplug or anything for your ear, a mold is needed to take to be taken of your ear in order for us to make the actual earplug. So that service is something that most people working gig work, nightlife, all that, they won't take the time to go do that. And not only that, it usually requires health insurance because you can only get it done through an audiologist or an ear, nose, and throat doctor. Right. So there's like this layered, you know, issue of getting it. And we really bring the service to them and it's helped to kind of overcome that hurdle. So that's it in a nutshell.
So Jay, you talked about the technicalities, you described the job well, but you did mention that you get to see a lot of cool, I don't know if you said cool shit, maybe that's just from our skit.
I do get to see a lot of cool shit.
Right, so what rank top number one or top three, what is the coolest shit and who has the coolest ear?
The coolest
ear. Okay, so.
He molds ears, come on, I want to know who's got the coolest ear.
I have done some really cool shit. It's like now I need to go back in the Rolodex of things. I mean,
knee jerk, which comes to mind first? Because that's probably the coolest.
It's so hard. I mean, there's so for me, I what gets me like is like I love working with the venues. So like when I get a call and they're like, we want you to come in, you know, I get a tickle out of the venues that we work with, like Tao Group is one of my clients. And so like on any given day, sometimes I'll get a call and they'll be like, hey, can you come by and fit one of the executives of Tao Group? And I'm like, of course I can. Like, you know, and it's just so cool. Or walking into any sort of venue, like the Brooklyn Mirage is one where I can be like, I pretty much outfit 100% of the staff there. And that makes me feel really good. But I get to do really cool stuff. Like, I was at Burning Man and one of my favorite camps, like organically, one of their DJs had been into my office in New York and then was like, oh, you know, what are you going to be wearing your earplugs for? Do you have, you know, where do you go? And so he goes, have you ever heard of Burning Man? And I'm like, well, of course. So, and then like kind of nothing happened. And a week before Burning Man, he had emailed and said, would you like to come to my camp? I have people that really need you. And so then I go to this camp and like, I don't know anyone there. And when I get there, they're like, I said, you know, this person's name. And they're like, well, how good of friends are you with him? And I was like, I just fit him for earplugs. And it was, and like, that's all I said. And they go, well, we were just talking about you actually, like come right in.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it just cracks me up. Like, I'm like, okay. So what I do is really special. And it just like, I just get, you know, I get a kick out of that. Like it's, I really love what I do. And I help to change people's lives in that way.
When you were talking about this like layered experience where it's like, you got to talk to OSHA, who's got to talk to Troy. I think that really keys up the idea that concert going and festival going has come a long way since, you know, 500,000 people just showed up in a field in upstate New York, which obviously creates a situation where we have maybe a lot of great user experience and a lot of bad user experience. So
1000%. And Joe, just bringing that up, like you think about like user experiences, I don't know if you guys saw the documentary on like Woodstock 99 and that user experience, you know,
and
how far we've come just those times.
So mad I missed Nine Inch Nails there. I had an opportunity to go and I didn't go. So
you made the right decision. You don't want to be there.
Oh, but Jay and I, that was
some people
set.
That were there. We could tell you stories.
I don't know how I wasn't there. My mom was like, how did you not go to that? I said, I really would like to know that answer too. Like, where was I?
Same.
So that's a good question though, Jay. What was your first music festival experience?
And that's a hard one. Like, I mean, Lollapalooza probably back in the 90s. I don't know whether we're counting that. Like,
Of course.
That probably would have been. And Joe, you might have been there with me like for that one. It was like, that was probably my very first, my parents aren't coming with me and we're getting turned loose at a festival, but I was also in high school. Mm. And then,
did you see Primus? Was that the one Primus?
I did. I went that year.
By the way, Les Claypool, the lead bass player, the guy, right? Yeah, he signed my Doc Martens in 1996, which is the most 90s sentence that anyone has ever said.
That's nice.
And then really just to caveat a lot of my most recent experiences, I'm heavy into more electronic music, more techno scene. So I really took a break from festivals then until I went to Electric Zoo Festival in 2011. And then that kind of kicked off probably a decade's worth of festivals now.
Nice. So. That's awesome.
Well, that covers you, Jay. That covers you, Joe. How about you, Dave? What was the first music festival that you ever went to?
Oh, well, I will say I was at Lollapalooza with Joe and Jay. Just we didn't know each other then. Oh. So it was probably the same exact one.
That's awesome.
I mean, it must be because that was the show. I remember just chanting Primus sucks. But for those who don't know, they like that. That's the intro to Primus.
You were probably at the Meadowlands. We were at Philadelphia or Camden.
Yes. Okay. Camden we were not close. I was at the Meadowlands. Yeah. But yeah, that was the first. That was the first. And probably I think I went to one more like in the South somewhere, North Carolina, probably another Lollapalooza. I don't really do festivals. Mm-hmm. I mean, last night was probably my first non-Lollapalooza festival, to be honest with you.
Wow.
I think Jay and I are the pro festivals where you guys are, because I've been to like Vans Warped Tour. I've been to K-Rock Weenie Roast. And obviously I've been to Coachella quite a few times. And actually, that's one of the things I want to talk about is, so I went to one of the first Coachellas, which was probably the worst user experience ever. And then where it's gone and how it's grown is really probably one of the best user experiences ever.
Yeah, Joe, I have some questions about that I'd love to spend a heavy chunk of time on this episode. My experience with concerts before we dive in is pretty simple too. Like it's more like Dave's. Like the first festival that I ever went to was something called Nocturnal Wonderland. Jay knows what I'm talking about. And it was a lousy experience for me, and I'll tell you why. Number one, let me set it up. Nocturnal Wonderland is a heavy EDM, techno, and at the time, drum and bass focused festival in the middle of nowhere in the outskirts of Los Angeles. And I went in college. It would have been 1998 or 1999. I think DJ Shadow was there, and Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction was doing a DJ set.
Nice.
Some other huge names. But here's the thing. I went with a group of guys, and they were very interested in expanding their minds during this music festival, and I was not. So I went stone cold sober, and I had this idea that, okay, they're going to go and do their own thing. I'll grab a couple beers or something, and that'll be fine. There's no beer to be had there. There's nothing. So you're taking psychoactive substances or you're stone cold sober. I was stone cold sober. And you show up at 10 o'clock in the morning. You show up at 10 o'clock at night and you leave at like 7 o'clock in the morning. That's a long time to be out in the middle of nowhere.
Sober.
Stone cold sober with all these people like just having a great time around you. it was lousy.
Take the trip, Brad. Take the trip, man.
TMI, I don't know if Brad, you want me to share? I remember you coming home from that festival just being like absolutely miserable.
I was miserable.
So you were scarred at a young age, Brad. So that explains your animosity toward festivals.
Real quick though, Joe and I did go to some sort of, I think it's a Warped Tour thing, which is also like super late 90s, early 2000s kind of like festival. And that was fine-ish. Didn't have a great time. It was also not really my scene. But then I went to one festival? Would you call KCRW Acoustic Christmas a festival or no? Maybe not.
It's kind of almost more like a but it's an indoor festival. And I want to get into that too, how indoor and outdoor, like, because outdoor festivals really make, I think, what a festival is all about. You know, it's almost more of like a variety show at, you know.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Quick story, though, about that one. I'll try to make it really quick. I was backstage. I was there on a professional capacity, and I was setting up these Guitar Hero stations for the music acts. So they're backstage and then they could like just play a Guitar Hero. I was working for that company at the time. Anyway, so I was doing a sound check for the Guitar Hero, and it was like big elaborate setup with its own speakers and everything. And I'm doing this Kings of Leon song, Sex on Fire,
for the sound check.
So I'm really good at Guitar Hero, or at least I was back in the day. And I'm like doing this, I'm playing and I'm singing, because it was with all the full instrument setup. And I'm like, whoa, this sex is on fire. And then I look over and it's the Kings of Leon guy just glaring at me with his arms like crossed.
No.
Shaking his head. What an asshole. Anyway. Yeah.
Was he really mad? Did he seem mad?
He really did.
Where the fuck is that guy now? Huh? Sorry. Not to shit on that. It was a good song. It's a good song.
Yeah. Jay just saw him at Burning Man 2 weeks ago.
All right. Okay. Okay. So right, I hear us Todd saying we want to get into this. We want to get into that. Why don't we get into something? Let's get into the show. Okay. Let's do the user experience. Is that where we are?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right, Brad, tee it up.
All right. Well, you start by getting your tickets and passes. We just did this. We did a whole Ticketmaster episode on this. Yep. So we don't have to spend too much time. It's a little different for concerts. So we bought our Primavera Sound tickets directly through the website. And what was interesting is that, you know, they had to snail mail us our credentials, which was weird and unexpected. I was not anticipating that, but I guess it kind of makes some sense.
But that's pretty standard, right, Joe? I mean, don't you always get a band or a badge or something when you go to these festivals?
I'll tee this up and then we can kind of go round robin with it. I would say like for Coachella, it's the tough part is it's so hard to get tickets. Like you got to log in and you can spend like an hour waiting in line, and then like what's available kind of diminishes. And I just went through this and like I got my tickets, but I couldn't get a campground. I'm like, I need a campground. So what am I going to do? And then when you get the tickets, you got to do this whole thing where like you connect it to like your like an account. And then what I liked about Primavera was you just got the bands, and then Dave, you just said you just walked up and swiped it.
It was easy.
Unlike
Coachella, these tickets were easy to come by.
Yes, like, exactly.
They were still on sale. There was a booth there where you could buy them. You could walk up and buy them. So,
By the way, Dave, I checked yesterday to see if I could still buy tickets because I don't want to get into it.
Were they still the same price or did they come down?
Still the same price.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah. Okay. So
no aftermarket, by the way.
Right.
Not available in any aftermarket.
Yeah.
Interesting. Good.
So, and then, you know, Jay's been to like tons. I guess you don't buy tickets anymore, Jay, but like back in the day, like.
There are things that I'll still buy tickets for, but Burning Man's definitely the one that's like the most interesting to buy tickets for and how that all kind of plays out. But otherwise, it's usually just getting on early and praying to the gods.
Yeah.
I would say the user experience in this has gotten worse over the years. Instead of there's just so many more layers now. You guys were bemoaning the fact that it came in the mail, but I kind of like that. It's like you buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. Comes in the mail, you have it, you walk in, you show it, you know, there's no accounts or Bluetooth or I don't need an app. I just want to get a ticket, go to a concert. I kind of like the old school way of doing it.
Yeah.
That would be my better user experience.
I mean, I guess I just expected it to be on my phone, but it makes sense if you're trying to check people and make sure people aren't, I don't know, somehow sneaking in. I guess that's the fear that they all have a wristband.
Right.
And then you don't have to do it there.
Yeah.
Right.
And Joe and I both had to transfer our tickets to other people because we weren't able to go. Right. So.
Oh, you did.
Well,
there was a process for that.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying is like I'm saying transfer, but really it was just handing our wristbands over to the people.
Okay.
So, yeah. Totally analog and manual.
Right.
And that's not the case.
That actually was okay. You know, in the grand scheme of things, they can't tack on fees like Ticketmaster does when you transfer tickets. Mm-hmm. It's just you have a wristband, and if you want to give it to somebody, you can give it to somebody.
Although somebody could steal it or you could lose it. That's the other side of that.
Oh, and here's the only other thing that sucks about wristbands. Has anybody ever put theirs on accidentally too tight? Then you're stuck for like 3 days with the blood cut off to your hand.
Swollen hand.
That's in the instructions. It says don't do it too tight. One finger, not two. And not zero, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to let that one go. So, you know, what's interesting is there was no technology involved, right? I thought that was pretty wild. There's no RFID or any kind of technology.
No, there was. So when you go up, you scan the wristband.
It was invisible to me. So that was.
And then it lit up green. I was very tickled by that.
I was going to say it seemed like super easy to, like, you know, to counterfeit those. But okay, that makes sense, Dave.
Yeah. So that's ticketing. So let's talk about Arrival. Joe, before you get into Coachella, talk about the one that's fresh. I was very impressed. I took the Gold Line there from Union Station. And actually, for Los Angelinos, I don't know why I've never done this. Parking at Union Station, super easy and super cheap. $8 for 24 hours. Yeah. So from now on, if I ever like have an event in downtown or wherever I can take the subway, I'm not driving into the city anymore. Screw that noise. I'm parking at Union Station and taking the Red Line or Gold Line. Yeah. So I took the Gold Line. It was one stop to Chinatown. And then you walk like a few blocks. I guess it was like 15 minutes. It felt like an hour on after I busted my ankle. But it was only like 15 minute walk. And as you walk up, they had all these food trucks inside lined up, which was cool. Yeah. They had a little restaurant outside.
Yeah.
They had several entrances.
Right.
And I mean, I got there late, so I don't know. I can't speak to what it was like, you know, with the initial rush, because I'm sure it sucked. But judging by how they handled everything, like they sent me to another line that there was nobody on this line. You know how people, humans are herd animals, right? So we all like to pack where we see the people. You know, I always try to do the opposite of that. So I was happy to meet this person who sent me on my way. It was really easy. You go inside, and I almost took a picture of this for you guys because I forget things. So I was texting you guys what was going on, but I almost sent you a picture of the line of porta potties. Usually porta potties is a hellish experience at any type of concert or festival. I think there was more porta potties than people. It was just a whole sidewalk lined with porta potties. I had no problem going to the bathroom. Now, right after a set, the place was flooded, but you know, just don't go then. You know what I mean? But any other time, it was super easy to go to the bathroom.
Right. Well, unless you're Jake, do you want to speak to that? Because I really can't imagine going to porta potties as a
female. We should give top 10s. Like, Jake, top 10 porta potties, best and worst festival.
Actually, yeah, seriously. So where are we? Are we on Arrival still or porta potties?
I'm throwing for a loop. Let's just go to porta potties real fast.
Guys, by the way, I don't know if we want to talk about bathrooms.
Well, so at Burning Man, they're at least smart about it. And there's porta potties that line every so often on the arrival and exit. So that if you're stuck in line, you have a place to go.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But no, the porta potties, so before I went on this podcast, I did kind of pull my Instagram followers, I guess. And porta potties was the number one thing of what impacts your experience, right? Like porta potties were it. Yep. So the porta potties at Burning Man are actually amazing. They're such special places that people, I'm not kidding. Like there are smart people in the porta potties, right? So they're kept immaculate. I lucked out this year. I batted 1,000 for porta potties that were not only clean, but also had toilet paper. Cause you got to come prepared. You never know what you're going to get, but they do a great job of cleaning them. And then there's the people in that are sitting in the porta potties, all the burners, they know what's up. Like they leave messages. Sometimes they decorate them. I have been into full on porta potties that were like dedicated to Frank Sinatra, and you sit down and there's all these pictures of Frank Sinatra. Okay. And
that's amazing.
There's a lot of snark and like messages written on the porta potties on the inside. And but they're very thoughtfully placed. Like they know that as a female, I am not staring dead ahead, right? Like I'm doing my thing and I'm not looking right at the door. I'm neither looking left or right. And then you look left or right and there's something brilliant written. So that kind of ruined porta potties for me out in the real world, because now, no one else takes the time to make these, what they are. Porta potties can be a special thing, and actually even right down to how you use them. I have girlfriends who have discussed like, how do you actually use your porta potty? And there are some girls that will step up and stand on next to the porta potty and do it. Right. I know.
Wow.
I've never done that, but I have a series of friends that do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's their method of self-protection versus...
I mean, I get it. You don't want to sit on... a million people have been in there. It's terrible. I mean, how is that different than any other bathroom, I guess? Porta-potties are gross.
Porta-potties are gross, but you got to know your animal, right? Like, so when I'm waiting in line for the porta-potties, which at Burning Man, there's really not much of a line. Maybe near the parties, like you might have to wait a couple people, but you're not waiting in a 30-person line like I've seen at other festivals.
Yeah.
So you got to eye up your porta potties, right? And if you see liquid coming out of the bottom of your porta potty, that's not your porta potty. Oh, you just keep going right on down the road, right?
Strategize. Oh, man.
I gotta tell you guys, to be honest, I'm glad that you love this conversation because I'm super grossed out and uncomfortable with this conversation.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm all about this conversation.
Brad, what are you gonna do? I propose to you that we do a public bathroom episode because I have many opinions.
Yeah,
many opinions. Like I've worked at major corporations, and I'm shocked that the bathroom experience isn't like, because everything in the corporate world is like, you know, it's posh, it's over the top. It's like, you know, they give you all these treats and toys and perks, and the bathroom is just garbage. Like, why are they not like, we're not going to get into it now, but I want to do this episode.
Just as a quick aside, I agree with Jay. Like, if you go to Coachella, like, you want to sneak into like the red campground because that's where the good porta potties are. Like, everybody knows the secret. But we haven't even like really finished like Arrivals yet.
I think Jay had a point that she wanted to make there on the she was about to say something.
No, go ahead. I don't know.
No, I just want to get. I want to get back to Arrivals.
I just want to talk about bathrooms too. The whole episode, Joe. What's wrong with that?
Arrivals and departures. Okay.
All right.
So Dave, you had a great arrival because you took a train. You were able to walk across the street, basically just be there.
And that's not the experience for everybody. I mean, most places you got to drive, but it's super awesome when
kind of a trip. You know, there's kind of a win loss to that too, because you kind of want. It's great when festivals are like out of the way and you got to get there, and it's kind of like, you know, Polo Grounds, you know, at Coachella, or I mean, Jay can talk about like 8-hour lines getting in and out of.
But there's a lesson there, Joe.
Yeah.
Right. I would think if I'm planning a festival and I've got a billion people showing up, I'm going to want to like maybe do a remote parking, something easy. And then you can take shuttles, you know, or something.
All right. So all of that works. And that I could go off on this topic because I could cite some festivals where they have the best laid plans and then everything goes awry. And sometimes that happens from a weather related perspective. Burning Man, you expect it. You know what I mean? If you aren't planning to sit in line, then you don't know what you're getting into.
Right.
And if you know how to work the system, that means you've been there a few years, you know, like we've had good and, you know, exoduses where it didn't take forever. And then sometimes things are just completely out of your hands. I sat 1 year for 13 years because a child went missing at Burning Man. But more often than not, I've had issues that were weather related. And you talk about shuttles and things like that. It was either weather or staffing related. So at Burning Man this year, we drove in at a good time. We got all the way, this is on the arrival side. We got all the way to, I could see the gates. Like, we're not like, I'm not like more than like, if I was continuing to drive, it might be 30 seconds to a minute drive. That's how far back I am if I was actually moving. Mm-hmm. And we sat for 4 hours. And the reason was because the volunteers that are supposed to be working, there were 9 people that did not show up for their shift.
Yeah.
And so we sat from,
oh my God,
10 p.m. until, you know, 1 a.m. or something like that. You know,
volunteers? Why are they not paying people to do these jobs?
Well, that brought up, if you get on the Burning Man boards, there's a huge, you know, discussion about this, because why do you not have that? And but I've also been to festivals. Like, I went to a festival down in St. Martin, and it was a first year festival. So I kind of want to be forgiving to their situation. Your first year festival, you're allowed to, you know, have some missed things. But in that case, the shuttles just stopped showing up. And now you've got people that were at parties at different points in the island, and the shuttles are just like, look, we're not there. You know, like, they just stopped.
Yeah.
And then I was at Tomorrow World the last year that they had it down in Atlanta, and a hurricane came through, and people stranded left and right, like all systems failed. It was.
So no contingency plan in place for inclement weather or just disaster.
Yeah. And my partner, my boyfriend, and I were talking about that because he works in the industry more relating to sound and lighting. And so he was at a recent festival, and he has a machine that says how many lightning strikes are close by. And like, there's certain protocol relating to when you should stop a show. And there's often promoters that are just pushing the limits because whether it's insurance policies or you need to get that artist on or whatever. And I think that there's a lot of logistical things within that, you know, as far as like how to handle arrival, departure, and depending on what's going on and your weather.
Nice.
You know, I have a question for you guys. kind of like from the historical perspective, as we talked about in the Ticketmaster episode a couple of weeks back, it seems like the economics of music has changed really drastically and severely over the past 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's night and day from what it was 20 years ago in my perspective. And I wanted to ask you guys how that has impacted sort of the user experience of these festivals. It seems like from talking to Joe, it might have really gotten better. Like they've invested more in the infrastructure of these festivals and, you know, even back to the porta potties. And
right.
Do you think that as the demand has increased and the cost has gone way, way up, has that improved the user experience of these things?
All right. Just to give you an example, I'll go back to Coachella again. The first time I went, one of the first festivals was literally you would drive out there and there was a field and you're like, just grab a spot in the field, park your car, set up a tent. And, you know, I went, I had water and food, and they're like, you can't bring in water, you can't bring in food. And it was, there was no in and out policy. And so like, basically once you were in and there was like, you know, there was a couple beer tents and there was like no water, bottles of water, like $7. I mean, I remember like waking up on Saturday and going, I don't even want to go in. Like I drove into town and got lunch and then went to the evening. It's changed so much to the fact that like, you almost don't even have to go to the concert. Like the campgrounds are almost the experience in themselves. Like, you know, DJs at night, vendors, you know, there's just stuff going on and like the way they've set it up now, like you arrive and you have a spot and you try to get a couple campsites and you put them together and basically set up a camp for 3 days. And then, so there's now better first aid tents. There's now better security. There's now better this and that. Kind of takes away from the whole rock and roll feel of a festival. Like just 500,000 people showing up in a field and having a great time for 5 days. And, you know, there's
a little Disneyland.
People just plug. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But
what do you think about that, Jay?
But it also adds to it, you know.
I have a good and bad of this. Like on the good side, like relating it to arrivals and departures. So depending on where you're, the further out you go into the rural area, the less options you have. You're driving and strictly driving, right? Fine. But like I've had some great experiences with festivals that are close enough that they're leveraging like Austin City Limits Festival. I was there last year You could rent Lime bikes or the Lime scooters. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, it was the most enjoyable way to get to and from a festival. And it was easy because they had them already charged and located and everything like that. So their technology is a plus. On the side of not relating it to transportation, but like, but to Joe's point about like just the good old rock and roll and the organic nature of things, there's a lot of things that I think technology has ruined. You know, like I think that the Instagrammers at Burning Man and these people that are just taking photos and living for the gram take away from the actual organic experience. And then I also think that like, as much as I love the production and the lights and the lasers and everything, because they all have to be programmed, you don't have bands going off the cuff anymore. Your set lists are predetermined. And everybody's got to be done by a certain time. And there's nothing like that. I could go see a show in Philly. I could go see a show in LA. It's going to be the same show, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's my take on that.
I was like, Queen can't just riff for like a half an hour at Live Aid and just blow the whole doors off the industry.
Let's pause. Let's pause on the grammars, the Instagram about that, the gram, because I struggle with this, right? So there I was last night. And it's great for a show like Nine Inch Nails because you really don't have the option to do that, to hold your phone through the entire thing, because you're going to drop your phone. Like somebody's going to land into you and the phone's gone. So, you know, so I'm pushed not to, but I always have this struggle because I'm like, I want, like, especially if I'm up close, I'm like, I want to get some cool shots. You know what I mean? So it's a pretty interesting balance between like, don't be a dick. You know what I mean? And hold your phone up the whole time and block the view, and like, you know, snap a quick video or shot and put it away. But don't be sitting there like posting it live in the moment. That's crazy. I've never done that. Like I just posted stuff this morning. You know,
there was a guy sitting next to me at the Roger Waters concert who went live on Facebook.
Oh God!
Yeah. And I almost threw his phone. I was like,
that's the worst. That's the worst. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a problem. You're right. It does ruin it a little bit. I force myself too. I go, just experience this, Dave. Because there are like so many, but I'm like, And I, you know what's funny is I took my phone down there, these red beams coming out, as you talk about lasers coming out, and Trent Reznor was like in between two of them and it looked so cool. I'm like, oh, I got to get a picture of this. It looked like shit on my phone. And then I like went back to reality. I'm like, fuck this phone.
Yeah, right.
I was like, this is much better.
Yeah, totally. Some things just can't be captured. To keep us moving, because we could talk about this all day, and at this rate we are. But Jay, you know, I'm very cognizant of our perspective of three white dudes in our 40s. I wanted to ask from your perspective about security and, you know, if that is an issue at these things or if you feel like that's a non-issue.
So
do you feel safe when you're at these things as a more on a consumer level?
Overall, I do. I mean, there's been definitely some places, but I was outside of the country at a festival and in that case, there was cartels that were involved, and there was a very unsafe feeling. But that festival actually doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. But overall, I do, and I might be limited in this just because of then, you know, kind of just being able to see things from if I didn't know the industry the way I know the industry, would I feel differently? Mm-hmm. And when I pulled my Instagram friends, one of them actually did say a space for, you know, women to feel safe and protected. And I think and the other one was harm reduction. So I've had, I had somebody else say that having more places for harm reduction were, but yeah, overall I do. I think there can always be more messaging about consent.
Sure.
And things like that ahead of festivals and that they should have that.
I'm sorry for my ignorance, but what does harm reduction refer to?
So harm reduction can be like exactly that, like being talking more about consensual issues and making sure that like whether it be like taking a photo of someone and you know with their permission, if you're going to interact on a physical level with someone, that you have that consent, you know, from the moment all the way through. And then the other part of that is probably like in drugs and allowing people the opportunity to take someone to a medical tent without the risk of getting arrested or, you know, having drug testing things like dance safe on site, like so that kids can test their drugs and, you know, prevent harm. Basically all the things that you can do to prevent harm, having Narcan on site.
Yeah.
Things like that.
The consent is a really good thing when it comes to, you know, phones and photography, and especially through the lens of a festival like Burning Man, which can get pretty rowdy, right? I imagine that's a huge issue.
That's an issue in places you wouldn't expect it. Like the temple at Burning Man is a very sacred space. People go there to take their grief and they go there to mourn. Mm. And then there is beauty in that, but that is not your beauty to capture on a phone. And there are people that will go through and take pictures of that. You know, and not ask someone for their permission to take that.
Yeah.
Is there any type of communication about consent? Because I did see at this Primavera Sound last night, a lot of billboards about, you know, acceptance of gay and queer culture and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So a lot of messaging. Is there any messaging on harm reduction when it comes to like consent and stuff like that? Because I feel like, I mean, there's monitors everywhere, you know, and there's billboards everywhere. I feel like that's something they could be proactive about.
So at Burning Man, it's in all of the porta potties.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Let's just relate it. Let's come full circle with this. It's in the porta potties.
See, this is a port. This is a toilet issue, and I'm fine with that.
I'm really hoping we can get off the porta potty.
All problems can be solved in the porto. And I think at festivals, like even having like at Burning Man, there's a place called Zendo Project, and that's where you would go, like for the most part, for a lot of the things, you can go to Zendo Project, and that's a safe place. So I think that at festivals, if they actually have that, promoting it, and then, you know, making you not feel like an alien for walking in there, making it actual, normalize it, you know, make and bring that to life, like as far as like not programming it certainly, but, you know, in its own way, like make it a comfortable space, make it out there in the public and not hidden off in some remote area of the of the festival.
Dave, question for you, kind of like pivoting off of, you know, the safety question. So you had an experience where you got injured and you had to get treatment. Can you talk us?
You want to go to the medic tent?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. I was very impressed. I mean, I went there, it's pretty late in the day, so there wasn't that many people in there. They saw me right away. They took some of my information.
Yeah. Insurance information?
No, just my name and phone number and stuff.
Cool.
And then they wrapped my foot. Gave me some ibuprofen. I asked for more. Yeah. they obliged because they gave me two. What is that going to do? Right. And then a nice nurse like iced my foot, like held it up. And I was like, are you sure? Like at first I was like, you sure it's a gross foot right now? Like, I don't know if you want to be grabbing. But thankfully she had gloves on for her sake.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were pretty awesome about it. It was a very seamless experience.
Good.
Everybody is nice. And I asked them, you know, what type of things, like, does this happen a lot? What do you see here? And they kind of catalog what they've been seeing. And it's like a lot of heat exhaustion, a lot of people getting way too drunk and just passing out. And they have to kind of like get the gurney and bring them to the tent.
Right.
Drugs, you know, people just being like out of their minds and just have to sit it out.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the things they see. I'm sure they see a lot more. I'm sure people get like bloodily injured at certain festivals. Like I imagine the Warped Tour medic tent is a fun place to be back then. But yeah, good experience. Good experience at the, I'm glad that happened so that I could talk about it.
Do you think, okay, did you have a good time? Was this a good experience overall for you, Dave, last night? Because you don't go to a lot of these festivals.
I got to tell you, I think your disdain for festivals would have been corrected last night.
Yeah.
It was a very good experience. And I wasn't even there for that long. Like I was kind of a baby about it. I mean, I only wanted to see Nine Inch Nails. I didn't know a lot of these bands, but I did see like two other bands. And it was pretty awesome. I mean, it was, I saw Fontaines DC, I think they're called, kind of like a punk band.
Cool.
Friggin' amazing. I'm a fan now. And then I saw another band that was kind of like funk and I don't know, like they just played, I don't know what they were, but they're pretty cool. They're right before Nails. So look them up on the set list. But I'm going to check them out. But yeah, it was great. And I'm kind of mad that I didn't go earlier, that I didn't go during the day and check out the different tents and like, you know, buy some merch and eat some food or meet up with people, you know. So I probably would have had an even better time had I done that.
Well, let's find another one to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just not going to drive. That parking scenario, that's the deal breaker for me. I'm not going to ever be stuck in a parking lot for 4 hours.
Don't do it.
Just not going
to do it. Take the train.
Guys, before we wrap up here, any last points or anything that we want to hit on that we didn't touch on so far in festivals?
Well, I'd like to almost shift into some of the good UX of festivals. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about a lot of it. I think Dave just hit on the main one. You know, we almost spent $300 to go see Nine Inch Nails in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
I think for $200, he went and discovered. And that's what I love about festivals is like, you know, you go because there's like two or three bands you think you're going to like.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, when I'm at Coachella or something, I'll wake up early and I'll do the morning shows and just kind of walk from tent to, oh, this band sounds great. I'll go check them out. Nah, they suck. I'm going to walk next door.
Yeah.
And you could just spend 5 days just kind of like, or, you know, 4 days just taking it all in and
you're just kind of your own. That's long. We should do Burning Man. We should all four of us. We should all do Burning Man next time because I've never been.
I'd like and to it's do about, that once.
Before I get my AARP card, I should do Burning Man.
Too late, but we can wave it. Yeah, man, I would love to do that just once. You know.
Okay, it's done. We're doing it.
I was gonna say maybe you guys start small and go to Coachella with me and then
big.
Go big or go home. Okay.
Exactly, right. Joe.
Yeah, I'm gonna do exactly one of these in my life, so it's gonna be Burning Man.
Well, all right. Well, you'll have to be our guide if you will oblige.
I would
us there.
Be happy to be your shaman.
Fantastic.
Love it. I think you need that.
Yeah, I was gonna say I gotta bring up two more things that I found really great about festivals. There is something magical about being outside. When the night falls, there's something that magical that happens at a festival outside. It's like it
gets cool.
The equivalent would be like at a concert when like the headliners go on and like obviously they turn on more amps and the lights go up. Mm. There's just something great about when the sun goes down and the night bands go on.
It sounds like Joe is on the pro festival end of this, and Brad is on the anti, and I am smack dab in the middle, and Jay is on the you're on the pro.
I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle. I say Burning Man kind of ruined me because you don't really wait in line, and if you are waiting in line, you know that you're waiting in line for something really good, and so but like you don't have to wait in line for anything, and you also don't exchange money for a week. So things that you know, there's no money exchange. Like you can you kind of. Everybody just goes out there.
You bring your own food or they just give you food? It's part of the package.
No. So it's a little bit of both. So you pack in, pack out. You bring what you need to survive and then you can be part of a camp and that supports you and everything. But the other part of that is that camps give too. So like there might be like there's a camp called Midnight Poutine and every midnight at midnight they serve poutine to people. So if you know about this, then you can go get stand in line. Okay. And there's actually even a food guide.
Oh. Actually, that would be fun for me. I'd like to go and cook for people.
There's so many stories. I mean, there's a camps that like I had, mm-hmm. somebody was cooking steak out in Deep Playa, like at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you go up and you get yourself a little piece of steak or so. Getting back to why I'm kind of in the middle is that like, I like a festival where I don't have to wait in many lines. Like you shouldn't have to wait in line for water really, minimal bath lines and then, getting in and getting out. And I found that the festivals that are the best are like what Joe said, where you just go and explore music and there's multiple stages. Or I really have loved festivals that actually take place in small venues. The Blues Challenge is something that I go to through work. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a festival, but it's sort of not, meaning that it takes place, you get a festival like badge, it takes place over 3 or 4 days, but it's you get to go and experience different bands at different times. And it's just so easy, make it easy.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, that's the theme of this show. All user experience should be seamless and easy. I mean, that's right. I mean, and that's what we're striving for. So it sounds like Burning Man is the only festival to go to.
No, not at all. But Burning Man's hard. It's definitely hard, but they at least set the right expectation. Mm-hmm.
That has a built-in culture, Jay, right? Like that's a big differentiator between Burning Man.
Yeah, that's true.
You are of a mindset and that community is a huge part of Burning Man that maybe is not built into these other festivals.
And right. I've been at other festivals where you just feel that you're just being, it's just money after money after money. You're paying $20 for a hot dog. You're paying $10 for a water. There's no water refill stations. And that to me lends itself to a bad user experience because it's like your ticket prices were already more than what you thought they were going to be relating back to the Ticketmaster problem. And then you get there and you're just not prepared. And at some point it takes away from the experience.
Oh, you mentioned water. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention shout out to Primavera Sound for letting you take an empty water bottle in, because I've been to places that don't let you take anything in. And that was important to me because I drink a lot of water. and the funny thing is right as the mosh pit pit started, Joe, my full bottle of water, which I've been sipping a little bit for the past hour and a half because I didn't want to lose my spot up front.
Yeah.
The top falls off and all the water spills all over my pants. I was like, damn it.
Well, I was going to say, just imagine being at Coachella on the early days when this was before like the prevalence of like Square. There was no credit card reader. So once you're out of cash, you couldn't buy the $10 bottles of water. Oh, I remember somebody like broke a water hose and the line, like people just crowded around like this place where we were all, it's gotten so much better.
I'm so surprised that you went back after that first year, Joe. That
I didn't for 15 years. And then when I went back, I was like, oh my God, well, they fixed a lot of stuff.
Night and day. Can we just say, Jay, you had mentioned porta potties while you were online, and it's something I wish they would do at amusement parks. Like, I don't understand the whole having to get out of line to go to the bathroom or to get water or to get stuff. Can we just say that whether it's amusement parks, festivals, events, water and bathroom, you should focus all your user experience energy on that.
Yeah, like, that's
key.
Because no matter what, when one of those fails, it is absolutely the first thing that you remember.
Right. Right.
When
I got married, I told for my marriage, I told everybody else who gets married, I'm like, you're going to get lost in the weeds. Make sure you have an open bar and you have a killer DJ, and no one will remember the cake. Bar and a DJ. That's it.
Sure.
Water and toilets.
All right, guys, this has been a long episode. I want to bring us home here. Any last points? I have one last question, but any last points that we just have to hit before we move on?
I think one of the biggest things that can impact user experience is like a well laid out site plan and just having multiple avenues of flow, but also like different experiences like these bigger festivals. I love like some of the experiential things that they bring in, whether it's like immersive type of room that you can go into and it's, you just kind of can step away from the music, and having that, it's a nice added thing to get at a festival that you weren't planning for.
Right.
Yeah. And that helps with flow too, right? Because you get people
It breaks it all up.
Okay. Last question for you guys. Dave, you did not wear your Nine Inch Nails t-shirt to the show last
week. Yes. Question.
Is it appropriate to wear the headliner shirt to the show in general?
Okay, we'll go, let's end with round robin.
I'll start with you, Dave.
Okay. I think this is something somebody said once, and then it gets in our head.
From the movie
PCU. It is PCU.
From the movie PCU with Jeremy.
Yes.
Don't be that guy.
I hate that I heard that, because it's like when my wife told me, hey, when you haven't worn a shoe in a long time, look for spiders. Now I'm terrified. There's going to be a spider in my shoe. And
why would you say that?
I don't know.
You just ruined my day.
I've just ruined thousands of people's day who are listening.
That's right.
But that's how Jen survives. She's like the janitor on Scrubs. She just kind of subtly fucks with Dave just to deal with it.
Yeah. So I didn't wear it. But the funny thing is, I brought it. I'm wearing it right now for our users. You can see. I brought it, and this is from like
the old days. Podcasts are typically audio medium.
Thank you, Brad. It's got a big blue N on it. Maybe I'll put it on the socials. And it says Nine Inch Nails Fixed. That was like a remix album, so it gives me a little street cred. You know what I mean? Because it's not just their normal Halo. Mm-hmm. But by the way, I met a guy named Halo. He changed his name to Halo. Shout out to that guy. He went to the Red Rock show and he said it was fucking amazing. We should go. And
love Red Rocks.
He'll put us up. I don't know if he'll remember me, but if he does, we're going to Red Rocks. So I think it's appropriate. I kind of bailed out only because I possibly was meeting people outside after in Chinatown. That didn't wind up happening, but I didn't want to walk into a bar like this. So I just wore black, and then I changed into this because I smelled pretty salty by the end, and I couldn't smell you from here. Yeah, no, it was pretty bad. But I think it's okay. A lot of people were doing it. Joe, what do you think?
I think it's more appropriate at festivals, especially big multi-day ones, because it kind of lets people know, the vibe of who you're there to see.
Yep.
But at the same time, you're missing a huge opportunity to dress as weird and crazy as you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, you're at a festival where, you know.
Yeah.
Brad, I'll go next. Wear a top hat and tails or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't care. I asked this question. I don't care about the answer. I'm not going to do it personally, but I don't care one way or the other. Yeah. Jay, how about you?
I think it's totally a game. You should wear your shirt. And if it's a festival where everybody's dressing up, do that too. You know, but yeah, I think it's fun seeing people and the different genres of their shirts and being like, oh, there's an OG.
Dude, nice. We're 4 for 4. We've put this issue to bed. Don't give a crap about what people think about what you're wearing.
Love it.
Wear what you want.
Yes, perfect. That's a good place to end.
All right.
That is our episode today. Jay, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to all of you users out there for listening. Jay, is there anything you'd like to plug, or where can people find you?
People can find me at oneofonecustom.com on Instagram. We are at oneofonecustomusa, and the ones are the numerical number one. Mm-hmm. And so if you know, I obviously plug wearing good hearing protection, and I'm happy to help people, you know, understand that a little bit better on the custom side.
I love it. All right. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you could, it would mean a lot to us. In the meantime, we are wishing you all health, a well-designed life, and good experiences.